What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Witches of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Damo back on the show. It is Thursday, February 15th. Hope everyone had a good Valentine's Day for those of you that have significant others and were able to spend the day with them or at least a day out of this week. I know it can be a little difficult with those that have different work schedules and whatnot, but happy love week to everybody nonetheless. Have a few different topics going to go over today. First, we're going to recap the trade deadline because we haven't talked with you guys since that happened. Wizards not being very active, of course, as we know by now. Then we will also get into some of the younger players on the team. We'll get into Denny Avdia, Corey Kispert, Johnny Davis specifically. of course, we'll touch on Denny's 43-point game that happened last night. Some Jordan Poole, Brian Keefe stuff to end the pod. And that's going to do it today for us. So a good load for everybody here. Pause. Especially since we haven't been able to talk with you all in a while and give you guys content. Of course, we want to try and be more proactive about that as the season goes. But recently, man, there just hasn't been much to talk about. We knew what we signed up for this season, but it's been some stuff lately that's happened. And of course, the trade deadline was recent. It happened towards the beginning of the month, about a week ago now, right? It happened, trade deadline. So It's been some time since the Wizards acquired Rashawn Holmes in a trade that sent Daniel Gafford to Dallas. In return, we got a 2024 first-round pick via OKC. So we did get a first-round pick for Daniel Gafford, and that is all that the Wizards were able to do at the trade deadline. And I got to tell you, man, like I'm not mad that Daniel Gafford was turned into a first-round pick. I just think that I would have made other guys more of a priority to try and ship out. Tyus Jones, in particular, DeLon Wright, Landry Shamet. Like, those are three guys off the top of my head that I would have preferred to see the Wizards move on from. The results from the trade deadline in general are not bad. Like, it's not bad from what the Wizards did, but I think it's a little bit puzzling as to why they didn't make some moves. And allegedly there was a package out there that was going to send Kyle Kuzma to the Mavericks as well, but both the front office and Kyle Kuzma both decided that it was best for him to remain with the Wizards, at least for now. So we'll get into that as well. But first things first, man, let me get your thoughts on the Daniel Gafford trade, sending him to Dallas and receiving a first-round pick in Rashawn Holmes, and then, more importantly, not doing much of anything else after that.
Yeah, man, I think that the Gafford trade was a win. You know, and it's funny because I feel like I have been more of a Gafford fan than you over the season. But I feel like we're kind of like opposite on this trade. like, because I like Daniel Gafford, but I like him in a certain role. And I think with a lot of the guys on this roster, when they kind of get extended beyond that role, then you start to see the real holes in their game. And so for me, Gafford has kind of always been like the perfect role for him was like, to me, has always been backup. Energy big, rim runner, shot blocker who thrives with a elite playmaking point guard that can get to the rim and throw him lobs. So when we had Russell Westbrook and then we had two big beefy centers like Alex Lynn and Robin Lopez kind of playing those starter minutes, it allowed Gafford to be in the ideal role. And so for me to get a first round pick for kind of a niche player at a center position that, you know, it's really like if you don't have one of the top guys, a Jokic or, you know, Embiid, a Wimby, a Chet, you know, with his versatility, you really kind of got to do it by committee. Like to get a first round pick for that to me is a W. And it's just no knock to Gafford, but it's just like the Wizards this season, they're 9 wins. They're a 9-win team. They had you know, their defensive rating with Gafford on the floor and with Gafford off the floor is identical. So it's not as if he, you know, I know if you look at the box score, it's like, oh, you know, he had three blocks, but you don't see, you know, it doesn't show you the offensive rebounds he gives up, or, you know, when he's out of position and, you know, a guy scores on him, or he chases a block and picks up a foul. Like, it doesn't show you those things. So I think he's a solid player. I think he'll do fine in Dallas. But if you would have told me going into this year we were going to be able to get a first-round pick for him, I would have been like, hell no. And so the fact that they were able to, I think that's a W. And that's not even factoring in the fact that Marvin Bagley is playing well. You know, so, and you basically got him for free. So that's just where I am on it. Like, I think he's going to do well with the Mavs. He's got two point guards that are elite playmakers and shot creators. And then he gets to, when Lively is healthy, he'll get to come off the bench behind him and be that spark plug. So he's perfect over there. But, you know, yeah, I think a first round return for him is great for where we are as an organization right now.
I would agree with that too. I'm not so much irritated with the trade itself in hindsight. My frustration lies more with what they chose not to do. And really quick on Daniel Gafford, you and I have the same exact view on Daniel Gafford. I think he's best as a backup big, where his role can be more compartmentalized. And he's not a starting guy getting starting minutes, having to go up against starting centers in the NBA. I think that he can do it in small spurts. And we saw that in the playoffs against the 76ers. And we've even seen it in the regular season. Like, there are some games where, like, I remember one of the games against the Sixers, we started out and he gave Joel Embiid fits. Like, he was frustrating Embiid. That kind of thing is not sustainable for him over the course of an 82-game season. Like you're saying, his best role is probably a backup. And it's like, from the Wizards' side for this season, and I don't think that this played any part in it, but, you know, if they were concerned about losing that type of player, well, we have Marvin Bagley now, so it's not like we're missing a whole lot. Now, I would have liked to keep both of them going into next season. And the only reason I would have said I maybe would have preferred to keep Gafford is just from, like, a team-building aspect. He still had some years under his contract, and they weren't expensive at all. And I just think that when you're trying to build a team, as long as they're not, you know, dirt old and there's a plan in place for them to be a part of your future going forward, even if the role changes, I think that that's worth investing in. And obviously the Wizards felt like they needed to accumulate more draft capital. I think that at some point this front office is going to be ready to make a splash, whether that's via trade or via free agency. And I think that they just want to make sure that they have the best possible options available to do that. And of course, I think that the way to bring in star talent is by getting draft picks. Now, I don't think that that's going to happen this offseason. I think that that would be very unwise for them to make that kind of investment. And obviously the draft pick that we got is for this coming draft. So I wouldn't expect anything like that. But I mean, I think the idea from them is just to try and accumulate as many picks as possible, which is where my frustration lies as to why they chose not to move some of the other guys on the team. And I figured I would let you open up on that now, and maybe why they chose not to do some of these things.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of they just didn't get the offers they wanted. Like, you know, I mean, and honestly, if they couldn't get a first for Gafford, he's probably still here. You know, if the offers for Gafford that were coming in were, you know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and, you know, a bad salary, or 2 seconds and a young player they don't really value, he would be still in a Wizards uniform. But, you know, so like, I look at Tyus, like, you know, I've been one of him gone. But if they want a first round pick for him, he's a guy that, you know, his last few games, he's been doing 15 plus assists. I think he has the best assist to turnover ratio in the league. They want a first round pick for him. But I just don't see how teams are going to give them that if they view him as a backup. But I guess from a front office standpoint, they're like, well, we'll just hold him. we can re-sign him. We have his bird rights. We can work out a sign and trade, or we can re-sign him and try to come back to the table with this when teams have more first round picks to trade. And similarly with Kuzma, you know, they want two first round picks. And so they're going to just hold him. He's on a good contract. They're just going to hold him and see what happens over the summer when teams get a little antsy during the draft time, as they're trying to build their roster before training camp. So, it's a gamble, but let's see how it plays out. I'm anxious to see how this summer goes for this front office.
Yeah, I think specifically with Tyshawn, I think the idea now is going to be to re-sign him. And look, a new front office came in, and you know, maybe we thought that a little too early because they were willing to move Yilin Porzingis, so they were going to be more proactive about trying to get the guys on the current roster out. But that hasn't been the case. If anything, I feel like it's just been kind of an equal split. You know, if they feel like that there's a plan for you on the team, you know, they're not coming in here and just throwing everyone out. They're trying to give everyone chances to prove themselves. And I mean, they signed two guys on the team already, Kuzma and Denny, that they didn't even see step on the court before they took over, they took over the position before seeing them play a game under them. So I think that it just goes to show that if they like you and they think that you have talent that fits the vision going forward, that they're going to try and keep you. And I think that that's probably the plan with Tyus here. And look, like I was just saying with Gafford, it's about team building. And would I rather have Tyus Jones or not have Tyus Jones? And the answer is I would rather have Tyus Jones because I think he's a good player. I just thought that from where we were, wanting to see Jordan Poole play point guard, wanting Koulibaly to start, I thought that it made the most logical sense to move on from Tyus. So, but from a pure talent standpoint, what he does on the court, I love Tyus Jones. It's a shame he's not 5 inches taller, but I still think that he's a valuable asset on this team. And if they're able to bring him back on a good deal, like they were able to with Kuzma and Denny, then I honestly don't see the problem and I don't have an issue with it, because then that's a deal or a contract that you can then flip down the line. They could go into the regular season with him, but at the trade deadline, if someone comes calling next year and maybe more teams will be willing to work with that next year because there will be years on his deal, then maybe that's where Tyus gets dealt. I think that from a fit standpoint,
I think in some respects he could be kind of the Mike Conley to your – you know, Ann Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns. And so maybe they view him that way. Like, maybe they think this offseason they can get him signed to a contract similar to how they structured Denny's and Kuzma, a de-escalating deal that's around, you know, that's backup money. You know, I don't think they're going to go out this summer and try to give him no $20 million a year. I don't see that happening. So, if they can negotiate that, he wants to stay here and he takes it. That's a guy that you feel like is going to be a productive player. He doesn't hurt you. And then at any point, given, you know, and he doesn't get in the way of development of a guy you might draft. You know, Tyus isn't going to force anything. He's just going to get the ball to the guys in the Florida offense. So I mean, I get it from that standpoint. I just would have liked to have, you know, really kind of clear the runway for Jordan Poole to kind of be more on ball.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest piece of that to me anyway, was how does that work with JP and trying to get him point guard minutes? Because, I think that as terrible as he's been this year, I think that his role is probably best suited, as ironic as it sounds, with the ball in his hands. So, because you want to try and rehab some value there. And if you can, you at least want to try and give him the chance to be as successful as he can. But Landry Shamet, I don't mind moving necessarily, because that's a guy that you can include in a deal over the summer. You can add that salary as a part of a trade if you want to take back a bad contract and get a pick along with it. Maybe that's the plan for this draft. You know, what's to say they don't put Landry Shamet in a deal. We take back some bad salary and we're able to move up from wherever that second pick is going to be this coming draft, and we're able to move up, you know, 5, 6, 7 spots. Right. So, you know, that it's that one doesn't bother me a whole lot. I think that DeLon probably bothers me the most, and it's a shame saying that because I thought that he was the easiest one to move, and that was pretty much like one second round pick. Like, if you could tell me we could have gotten the 60th pick in this coming draft, I would have done it. And but they chose there was, not to do anything.
Yeah, so there was a I think it was Josh's article he did with The Athletic that talked about that, because there were teams that were interested in DeLon, but you know he makes $8 million, so we would have had to take back $8 million in salary, and apparently the salaries that teams were trying to send back, you know, had like extra years on them, and then the pick you would have got would have been, you know, bottom of the second round. So like if you're telling me the only way we could have traded DeLon was we would have had to take back a salary, you know, $8-9 million a year with 2-3 years on it, and then the pick would have been a second round pick in the 50s or 60, you know, the 60th pick. Yeah, I'll pass on that. I just rather just let DeLon expire or cut him.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that too. And if that's the case, if they were only going to get a second round pick for taking back bad salary, then, you know, screw that. I mean, you may as well just, I'm surprised he's still on the roster though. That's a thing that kind of puzzles me a little bit too. So maybe they're waiting until he has more suitors and then they'll work a buyout out from there. But I mean, again, these minutes could be going to other players, particularly Johnny Davis. And I guess maybe that's where we can kind of pivot this conversation is into some of the young players. Before we get on Denny, we can touch on him last because we got to talk about the 40 burger. But Johnny Davis, man, I would love it if there was a some sort of plan in place for him to get some legit minutes as we close the season. I know he may not be good, but you need to find out. And I just don't think the Wizards have given themselves enough opportunity to see what he can be. I feel like there's never a defined role for him when he goes out there. It's just, we're going to put you in for 5 minutes at a time and see what you can do. And I understand from the position of he hasn't proven anything, but I feel like there just needs to be more structure with roles and how you roll guys out there and how you plan on implementing them. And I don't know if that's a front office thing. I don't know if it's a coaching thing or if it's a Johnny thing, but it'd be nice for them to have a legit plan in place, because they're going to have to decide whether or not to keep him for not next year, but the year after coming up. This fall, they're going to have to make a decision on that. So it'd be nice to see him legit with some legit opportunity. And you see some of the success that the other Tommy Shepherd draft picks have had on this team. You know, we just mentioned Denny had a 40 burger last night. Corey Kispert's been playing really well recently. Rui Hachimura, who, God rest his wizard soul, on the Lakers now, but had a big game last night and it continues to be a solid contributor in this league. So you would hope that maybe Johnny can kind of turn that corner eventually. But again, I think that the Wizards need to help try and do him some favors.
Yeah, it's tough with Johnny Davis, because I just haven't seen anything that looks translatable for him to be an effective NBA player. And you know, the last time we kind of checked in on him, he had a bad game in the G League. So, I know this front office, they do interval checks on guys and kind of set metrics and look at goals that they want them to reach. And that can't be him hitting the metric if he's struggling in G League, outings. But like you say, they're putting him in the NBA games, they're putting him in the last, 3 minutes of blowouts. And it's really just nothing to gain from that. So I don't know, man, because when I watch him, I don't see an NBA player. Like, he's a 6'5 guard that can't shoot. And he doesn't really leverage any type of advantage on the floor, because he's not really a plus athlete on this level. No real length to him. He tries hard on defense, but he's a 6'5 guy. So it's not like, he's 6'9 where he can, him trying hard can kind of disrupt the a team's offense. I really, and then the shot just looks, I don't know what's going on with it. I mean, it looks like he's dealing with some type of injury or nerve issue. I don't know, but it's like he's trying to shoot through an injury, or shoot around an injury, and it just looks, I mean, they look like prayers when he puts them up. Like, I mean, other NBA players don't even, you know, it's like they turn their back when he puts up a three ball. So I don't know, man. I'm rooting for the kid. Like, I rarely even talk about him because it's just at this point now, it just seems like piling on. But yeah, it wouldn't shock me if he wasn't on this roster after next year. Like, it would not shock me at all.
Yeah, me neither. And that's a shame because I thought that coming out, I didn't think that he was the best. I wasn't high on him per se, but I thought that he had the defense and I thought that his shot could be worked out to maybe even just slightly below average. And to me, with the players that we've had on this roster, that justifies playing time. And it obviously just hasn't panned out that way. But hopefully there's a plan in place for him, at least for the rest of the season, to for the Wizards to truly evaluate what he can do. Because, again, I just don't think the sample sizes have been there. Denny Avdija, and then we can get on. We'll touch on Poole and Keefe to end the pod. But Denny has looked more confident throughout the season. I think that Wes and Scott tried putting him in this box and they wouldn't allow him to truly be himself. And while I think that the criticism over the years has kind of been warranted, I am glad that he's starting to turn the corner and in a pretty major way. And I say all the time that I think that 30 and 40 point games are too casual now. But I think for a player of his level and with his expectation, it's a really, really positive sign to see from a forward that you're kind of hoping can be a part of the plan going forward. And I said myself at the trade deadline that I didn't consider Denny a movable piece to me because the price to get back, I know that, like, I would have asked for two unprotected first round picks. For me, that would have been the asking price to move Denny. And I think that with what he's shown, yes, that would have been my asking price. Or else I would not have done it at all.
I can see that. You mean like from a playoff team that's trading for him? You say unprotected?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can see that because the likely that pick is going to even be lottery. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Right. Either way, like the asking price was high, and I would have wanted another young player back in the deal as well. So it goes without saying, you know, he wasn't immovable. But it was going to be very difficult for me. Like, if I was GM, say, okay, yeah, I'm fine with moving this player who we happen to have on a great contract. And to me, throughout the season, I've considered more and more that he's probably a main piece of this roster going forward. I mean, now when I consider, like, building blocks of this roster, I think you have to consider Denny when having that conversation. It's not just Bilal anymore. It's probably Bilal and Denny who you're looking at keeping as serious pieces going forward. And then, of course, Kuzma, depending on how long-term you mean when we say future. But Denny's coming into his own, and he's gotten better and better. And I think that that's all we've kind of been asking for. And I know that everyone was pulling the receipts out, and everyone really liked him pre-draft. Mm-hmm. And so the fans say, well, why do you criticize him now if you liked him then? And it's just not how it works when you're making honest evaluations of players. Mm-hmm. And you know, just because a guy is playing bad at one point, you know, no one is saying that he can't turn it around. And no one is saying that we don't want him to get better. And as everyone can see, you know, he starts playing better and putting up games like this, and people have been more warmed up to him as a player and as a future centerpiece of this franchise. And it's not criminal to have rational thought at the time, you know. If you want to root for him because he's from your country or whatever, that's great. I mean, we would do the same thing, but it doesn't mean you can't have an honest evaluation about the guy's way and the way he's playing on the court. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, anyone can be a fan however they want. You know, no one should be out here trying to police that and playing the gotcha game, because that doesn't do anything. I mean, all it tells me is you cared enough about that person to take the time to go research that. And it's just like, you had nothing else better. Like, I don't think I've ever pulled receipts on anyone as it pertains to their opinions on sports. Because here's the thing, like, especially like when people talk about players, like, and that's the thing that people like to pull receipts on, right? Mostly is like players. And like, oh, this player's never going to be that good, or I don't like this player. And then the complete opposite happens. It's like, guys, no one has the magic eight ball. We're just throwing out opinions and creating discussion. It doesn't mean that it's gospel. It's just an opinion. But anyway, I say all that to say that Denny Abdia has been getting a lot better. And I think that it's about time we consider him a piece of this roster to build around going forward.
Now, when you say build around, what exactly do you mean?
I think that he should be a centerpiece of this roster unless they're able to bring in talent that is better. I don't think that he's a guy that I consider, oh, let's try trading him, or he may or may not be here, don't really care. Because that's how I feel about Kispert. Like, he's a guy right now where it's like, I don't really care if he's here, don't really care if he goes. Denny's a guy where it's like, I would really like to keep him and see where he can help take this team as we continue to accumulate talent.
I see. I guess for me, because when I hear build around, I'm thinking like, okay, this is a top three player on a contender. Like, when I hear build around. So I just want to, like, that's why I asked you, what did you mean by that? Because, like, when I hear build around, like, I'm thinking, okay, OKC, it's clear who they're building around. It's Chet, Jalen Williams, and Shea. Right.
Right. And it's not so clear here. So that's why I say it that way, is because there is no one clear player right now where you're like, let's build around that guy. So for me, it's just like, we gotta go with what we got. And of course, we know we don't exactly know what we're getting with Bilal, but we know that Denny's good enough. And so I think that warrants keeping around.
Yeah. See, I guess for me, like, I'm like, the 40-point game was great, but I don't know if I'm there yet on the build around, at least by how I define it. Like, I think he's the, like, would you say the Nuggets are building around Aaron Gordon, or are they building around?
I would not say that, but I would also add that we don't have those kind of players on our team that they do. Like, Denny right now is honestly probably our best player, if you take away Kuzma. Like, if we're talking young players on his team, Denny is our best player.
Yeah, so then that means then you don't have anybody to build around. You just have, you have what you have, and you're tanking right now to find the player that you want to build, that is, you know, you want to build around. Like,
okay, so let me change the term then. So I wouldn't say build around, I would say build with. Does that help?
Okay, yeah. Because I mean, I don't know. Because I mean, if you feel like he's a build around cornerstone player, then that's just, you know, that's your opinion. I was just kind of trying to translate it with how I define build around. Because to me, build around means you're a top three option. We're looking to you're a max player. We view you as a top three player on a playoff team, like the Wizards. When we got Wall, Beal, and Otto, that's who we built around. Like, even though Otto really wasn't that caliber, but we decided that's who our three we were going to build around on. So, like, do you feel like Denny, with him scoring this 43, doing 43 and 15 against a top 10 defense on the road, do you feel like now that's a guy you look at and you say, he is a player I would build around?
No, I think that would be a little bit short-sighted and with recency bias kicking in to say that he's like going to now all of a sudden be an all-star, all-NBA level player. But I do think on a team that competes, if you have the right amount of guys, and he can be, you know, the fringe third, fourth best player on your team. I think he has the tools to be successful. I think that we've seen that since the moment. I mean, even before the draft, I mean, yeah. We saw a lot of flashes with this guy, and he has a lot of tools. It was just going to be about, can he put it together? And the early returns during his career were not good, but we're starting to see him slowly put it together. And so if we continue to see that gradual progression and doesn't stop, I very much see a path for him where he's the third, fourth best player on a title contending team. I very much see that. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's a possibility if he continues to get better.
There's no guarantees with anything. No guarantees with anything. Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I guess I would agree with that then. Like I'm still kind of TBD with it. Like it's cause again, like he was just 10 points a game 2 months ago. And so now it's like, okay, excuse me. It's almost like a new player since the new year started, and particularly in February, his last six or seven games, it's been like night and day with the way he's attacking mismatches and, you know, getting to the right hand, driving and dunking on guys and finishing layups. And then that's giving him confidence to stretch out, shoot pull-up threes now. But I guess I just want to see more of it. Like, because I don't want it to be, you know, we put all this out here on him, and then, you know, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, you know, it's back to 8 points, 9 points, 12 points, you know, and we back on Twitter arguing over, you know, what's his ceiling? Because now that you done showed it, you know, now that you done got on this run, I want to see him take the bull by the horn and run with it.
The expectation goes up. We're not all of a sudden now going where he's going to have, you know, three games in a row. He gets 7 points and shoots 33% from the field. And, well, you know, the expectation has now gone up. And we're not saying that we expect him to go out there and average 25, 8, and 7 now. But we're saying that now we expect good shooting percentages, which we have seen throughout the season. We hope that they continue to hold. We want him to be aggressive. And we want to, again, to continue to see that gradual progression. And there are going to be nights where he doesn't play well. And that's any NBA player. And that's okay. For sure. We don't want to see bad streaks like someone on the roster, which I guess we can try and get into now. And we have this discussion like almost all the time, and I hate that we have to have it all the time, because I'm sure the guys in the locker room like him. I'm sure he's a likable individual, I guess, depending whether or not he has Draymond Green. And he has skill. And I think this is the most maddening thing about Jordan Poole, is there is obvious translatable skill that he can bring to a basketball team. And you just see absolutely none of it. Like, nothing he does is good. And
yesterday, he played a really good game. Like, I believe he had 19 points, 7 assists, 5 boards, 3 steals, and I think a block.
You know what, though? When it happens, I guess we're trying to find silver linings here, and I get that, but it's got to be consistent, man, especially for the salary that you're making and the expectation. Again, we didn't have out-of-the-world expectations for him. I felt like we had very reasonable expectations for him coming into the season. And maybe slightly, like, overhyped him. Maybe slightly.
Somebody on the side said he was better than Bradley Beal, but I'm not saying no names.
Hey, look, man. anyway, but it's so puzzling to me why he can't play well enough on a consistent basis. And I don't want to hear anything about his role. I don't want to hear anything about coaching. This is a very, very skilled basketball player. It should not be hard for him to be productive. If he was shooting really well and averaging 16, 17 points and like 3 assists, I would say, well, the guy just flat out needs the ball more. If we want to be real, like kind of what we were talking about before, like he may just need the ball. But that doesn't absolve, like, all of a sudden putting Jordan Poole in the point guard role isn't going to help him not shoot 30% from 3. So
I've always viewed Jordan Poole as kind of like a rhythm player. Like he gets rhythm by dribbling. He got to get touches on the ball, you know, get a couple crossovers in, and then he's kind of in sync with, you know, his pull-ups. And if you're the type that kind of likes, you know, Spurs basketball, then Jordan Poole is not your kind of player. Because that's just not how he is. You know, he's not about to do a bunch of backdoor cuts in setting screens and rolling and making the right play every time. He's a guy you got to kind of give him the freedom to create. He's an artist. Yeah. But if you're going to kind of try to put him in a specific role where he's kind of off the ball mostly, I think that is going to affect him. And I think it's going to have him thinking more instead of just playing free basketball. And so I think with Wes, and we've seen this, I think this even affected Denny and Kispert and some of the other younger guys. Is like, it was just too much information at one time, and they coming out every time trying to run a play and they, in their heads, instead of just playing read and react basketball. And Wes tried to do it this year, but that just wasn't something he really majored in, because he didn't want to do it. He did it because, you know, third year coach, no winning record, and, you know, he's kind of in a lame duck situation. So, all right, let's give it a shot. But I think you're seeing it with Keith. He's kind of putting these guys in situations where they can play read and react basketball, and they can attack mismatches. Like, even with Denny yesterday, watching him, like, they weren't running plays for him to get his 43. He would get the ball. He'd come down. He'd see C.J. McCollum on him. Just attack him. Put him in the post. Like, and get fouled. Like, we don't need to slow it down, run a play. Okay, where am I supposed to be? Who am I supposed to set a screen for? What screen am I supposed to run off? No, just simple basketball, read and react. So I think Poole needs to be in that type of environment to get the most out of him, because he's not Bradley Beal. He's not that type of player where you slow it down, you run a half-court offense, he's running off 100 screens. He needs the ball in his hands to kind of feel the game out and kind of get his rhythm. And if you're not going to give him that, then you might as well just put him on the bench.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I hope that they give him the freedom, because I think that we have a lot of players now, you know, Denny, Kuzma, Poole. I mean, right now, those are your three best players. And I think that they're best when they're just playing basic basketball and you're just letting them figure it out on their own, for better or worse. So, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, Scott Brooks might be the coach for this group right now, because you know that there would be almost no structure, and they would be able to, I think, find their own rhythm. And there was always a basic offense, you know, when in doubt, just run pick and roll or post somebody up. And that was kind of the offense for that. So, and I think that ironically enough, that would work for this group.
But he had a top 10 offense with Beal and Davis Bertans as his best players at one point. It tell you right there. So, you know, Brooks is one of them type of player coaches. He's going to try to empower you to just go get your shot. And I think some guys need that. And it don't work for everybody. It may have a cap on it as far as how far you can go in the playoffs. but certain players kind of need that. That's the only way they can really play at their best.
We touched on it a little bit, and this will be our last topic of the day, but how have you felt about Brian Keefe and the way he's handled everything so far? Are there some things that you really like, or some things that you kind of, that they did the same and wish that they would switch up, or how do you feel about him at this point?
I'd say it's been somewhat impressive given the roster talent. Given the situation he took over, because it was clear guys just stopped responding to Wes. I just think they tuned him out. Because the players know. They know when a coach is kind of over his head and it's just not working. So I think Keith kind of energized them. Like, okay, what are we about to do now? And I've seen him kind of like let his guys play. Like, how many times we watch Wes kind of ice his own players? A guy be on a heater, he pulls him out the game because well, that's what his game sheet says. Like, I'm taking you out with this many minutes left in the second quarter. Even if you scored 20 points that, you know, you want a heater, he going to pull you. Whereas Keith, like I saw yesterday, Bilal picked up 2 fouls in the first quarter. He kept him in the game. Wes would have pulled him. But no, Keith was like, no, it's all right. You stay in there. You figure it out. And, you know, Bilal was out there guarding his ass off for that coach. And I just think, you know, those type of little things, those little adjustments, I think go a long way with player morale and just player confidence and what they're willing to do for their coach. Because since he's been the coach, outside of maybe, what, 2 games, have you seen any blowouts? Because outside of maybe it was 2 games, I think, the way they were like down, you know, big within the first, and it was early, you know, where they were down big by, you know, by half or by mid third. But outside of that, the games have been close within 8-9 points, pretty much the whole game. And in the fourth, they compete and then they just can't close the deal. And I believe they have a top 15 defense over the last 15 outings. So there's tangible changes that he's made, but I think the biggest one is that he's letting guys kind of play through their mistakes. And if they're hot, he's going right back to you. Whereas I think Wes was kind of just very rigid in how he did things, and he just wasn't adjusting.
Yeah, I'm still not there with, you know, saying that he's the guy, you know, give him the job, extend him, whatever. But it's good to see that we've seen some, I think we can mostly call positive changes as we continue to get closer towards the end of the season. And I think that that's a good positive place to end this today. I want to thank you guys for taking the time to listen to another episode. If you aren't subscribed to the pod, please make sure that you are. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Woo-hoo.